Well, the title today, while this is getting ready, the title today is Where Your Treasure Is. And I was thinking of treasure. You know, as kids, they learn about treasure really, really early. You watch the children play and they say, what's mine is mine, what yours is mine, right? Yeah, they learn that kind of rule and then they have to be taught. No, you know what? You need to share. You need to give to others, allow them to play with your treasure. Well, I don't want to do that. And so right from young on, we learned about treasures, and there are all kinds of treasures that we have in our lives and all kinds of treasures that we have, that we keep. I think sometimes of the people who have to evacuate in northern Alberta, there are fires going and people have to leave their home. And you think, well, what would they take with them? What if their home burns down? What kind of treasure would they take with them, right? The people out east and where floods are, it's the same question. The floods kind of come in and take over their home, and it's a problem, and treasure, and what happens to their treasures? And sometimes it may not be worth that much to somebody else, but to the person, it's worth a lot. So I have a few treasures here today from my high school days. And, these treasures are, I kind of put them together so that I could put them on the wall. This treasure is the acting award I got in grade 11, and you can see it's got the acting faces on it. This little cup was a basketball tournament I was part of we lived in the mountains up in Missouri, and we went down to the plains, to Dehradun, which was the big city below, and we won the tournament. So I got a little cup on it. And this one is a W for sports. Now, to get this W, it has the school colors, the brown and gold. And to get that W, you have to be excel at so many sports in a year. And so I got that. And then I have some other ones here. There's one for track and field, for basketball, for field hockey, and another one for soccer, and so on. And this one, though, on the top is a very special one. It's a silver W I got in grade 6. And it's sports day, and I got first in about 4 or 5 events. And so these things have kind of stayed with me, and I packed them away. And somehow in all our moves, they've come along. So what are your treasures? What do you have in your home that you kind of keep and that is special? And that is in a special place. But you know, there are other elements of treasure too. We treasure people. We treasure God, right? And one of the ways we treasure is in our giving. And we express our treasure that way. And I want to tell a little story, and maybe told it before. When I was a pastor in Laird, Saskatchewan, somehow the Lutheran pastor and I were chatting and outside, and I don't even know how we got together, but he said, and I don't know how we got on this topic, but he said, you know what, I'm going to tell you a story. We talked about giving and the problems we have, and he said, I want to tell you a story. So he said there was this church in this little town in Saskatchewan somewhere that found it hard to find a treasurer for the church. And they searched around. Nobody wanted to take the treasure. You see, the church was in a tough, there's more red ink than black ink in their treasury. And so they were looking for someone who would be the treasurer. And finally, the elevator agent who was part of that church, he said, well, I'll do it. But I'll do it on one account, that nobody will ask me for an update until a whole year has passed. You can imagine the church would be thinking, oh, you know, what's going to happen here? You know, they're wondering, so how is this going to work? But they said, well, nobody else has volunteered, so I guess we have to go with it. So they volunteered. So he volunteered his time, and it came about, and there's no updates about the budget, and everything seemed to be going well. And then finally, at the annual meeting, he gave his report. And people looked at the report, and they looked at it again, and they looked at it again and said, whoo, we're in the black. I said, well, how did you do it? He said, well, you know what? When you brought your loads of grain in, I took 10% right off the top. Where's your treasure? We still haven't got this one working yet. Okay, so, and you know, it's, and Jesus also had this problem or issue come up, and in Mark chapter 12, Mark records this story, and he says, Jesus was sitting where the offering was coming in the temple, so he sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put her two very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on." So let's look at these stories just a little bit and think of, try this once more time. Whoops. Maybe that's the problem. It's helpful if you see this. There we go. Hey, we got it. Thank you. All right, we're on. So where's the treasure? So there's an action, there's a motivation, and there are results, right? So with the elevator story, the agent, he took a tithe of all the church members who were farmers, right, to meet, and the motivation was to meet the church budget, and the result was the church budget was met. Now, if you would think back of that, how could that story be a bit different? Well, perhaps the action would be the same. He would take a tithe from the church members who were farmers. But maybe he would step back and, rather than himself being the motivator, he would engage the farmers to agree on 10%. He said, "Okay, so I'm the elevator agent, and I want to agree with you to something. I would like you to think that every time you bring your grain in, 10% goes to the church treasury." Now, if the elevator agent had done that, the motivation would have been different, right? Because the results would have been the farmers in that church could have learned the joy of giving, right? And you can see, so there's an action, there's a motivation, and there are results. So let's take a look at this a little further. So the woman at the temple, and the wealthy people, they gave their offering. The wealthy gave their offering, and probably they gave it so that they could be seen by others, at least Jesus could see it, and they gave of their wealth, and the result was there was no sacrifice in their giving. There was perhaps no worship. On the other hand, the widow gave her offering. The motivation was that she gave her two pennies. She gave all that she had. And it was probably done from a place of worship. She worshiped God with all that she had, and she brought it to the temple. Imagine that. Wow. This lady gives all that she had. She'd have to trust God when she steps out of the temple and steps into her house. How am I going to get food for the day? Right? A tremendous, tremendous place of worship. So, there is in our scripture in Matthew chapter 6, the action that Jesus talks about in verse 1 is the acts of righteousness. Jesus says, "Your acts of righteousness need to exceed those of the scribes and Pharisees." And he's talked about their motivation. Their motivation was to be seen by people and to be talked by people in sort of a popularity contest. And the result was, Jesus said, that there was no reward from their Father in heaven. So let's go on to Matthew chapter 6, verses 2 to 4, and we get another action. He says, "When you give to the needy," he isn't saying, you know, it's assumed that people would give to the needy. It's not something that they would give a little bit here and a little bit there, but he assumes, I think, that this is part of your life. This is what you need to do. And so he says, when you give to the needy, and then you look at the motivation, and one motivation is to be praised by people. So they give to the needy, they make it public, they come walking in and they make it public, look what I'm giving, and so on. And so the motivation, the action is there to give to the needy. The motivation is to be praised by people. And then the result is that they have received their reward in full. On the other hand, the motivation, Jesus says, give to the needy, do it in secret, so that your right hand doesn't know what your left hand is doing. And what is the reward? The reward is that your Father in heaven will see you because he sees what's done in secret. So we get this pattern. There's an action, there's motivation, and there are the results. So in Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 21, we have some of the same pattern. So there's a result, a pursuit of a treasure. And in pursuing the treasure, Jesus says, store up treasures on earth where moth, so one of the motivation is to store up treasures on earth where moth and rust can destroy. And the result is the heart will embrace the temporal. So Jesus, and it ends up, where your heart is, where your treasure is, there your heart will be. So when you store up for yourself treasures on earth, the heart will embrace the temporal, that which we can see, that which is now, right? And then he gives another example. He says, what if you store up your treasure in heaven? And what happens? And what happens there, the heart will embrace the eternal. And so you see, the action is pursuit of treasure. The motivation, you can either store up for yourself treasures on earth or store up for yourself treasures in heaven. And the result is also according to where you store the treasure. And then he says, where your treasure is, there will your heart beat. No, be. You can see where your treasure is, there will your heart beat. It's connected. I add beat on there, but that's where your heart will be. And you can recognize that. You recognize that so powerfully. When you take a treasure away, it's like, oh, I lost something. When somebody comes in and steals something, it's like, oh, how did they get in? You feel vulnerable. You feel lost. In January, somebody broke into our garage and took a bicycle, and oh, feels so vulnerable, feels so lost. It took a treasure, in a sense. It's not huge, but it is something that belonged to us, and they took it, and we can't seem to find it, so it's out there somewhere. But, where do we store our treasures? Then he goes on in 22 and 23. He says, you know, see the eyes. He sees the eyes as the lamp of the body. And here again, there's two motivations. So one motivation is that the eyes need to be healthy or generous. The translation is generosity here, and healthy can be generous as well. So I've included both of those. So when your eyes are healthy or generous, what happens? The result, the body will be full of light. The other motivation is if your eyes are unhealthy and stingy, your body will be full of darkness. And then Jesus says something that is kind of hard to understand. So he says, if the light within is dark, how great is the darkness? He's using the light and dark theme. And it's hard to understand. What is he meaning by that? And sometimes, you know, I wonder, what do the eyes mean? The eyes are maybe the spirit, talking about a metaphor about the spirit of our life. When our spirit are healthy and we're generous, our body will be full of life. When our spirit is unhealthy and stingy, our body will be full of darkness. And how great that darkness is, even though we think it's light. And then Jesus goes on, he says, you can't serve two masters. Either you hate the one, or you love the other, or you will despise one, and you will be devoted to the other. So what are the results? Well, he says, if you hate and despise, some of the results can be from serving money, right? Where money becomes like God and is God. When you love and devoted, you're serving God. And then he says, you cannot serve both God and money. Pretty powerful, isn't it? And he lands on the argument. So he starts on, Matthew chapter 6, he starts with the idea that you can't practice your righteousness like the Pharisees. And he ends this argument. I've skipped some verses in there, but he ends this argument. He says, cannot serve both God and money. So what do the choices look like? Serving God and serving money. When you're giving alms, the choices when you serve God is seen by God, even though others don't know. You're drawing attention to God. And when you're serving others, or serving money, you're seen by others, drawing attention to show how spiritual one is. Okay? If you go to the other one, where your treasure is, when you're serving God, it talks about the intangible that are lasting and that do not lose value. And when we serve money, we're talking about the tangible, what we can easily see and accumulate as treasures. All right? When we serve God, the eye is the lamp to the body. So eye is healthy and generous and lights up the whole body. And we serve money, the eye is unhealthy and stingy and brings darkness to the whole body. And then, who is one serving? And it comes to a place from love and devotion when we're serving God. And we're serving money, it can lead to hate and being despised and so on. So we get this contrast, and I've looked at it from two different ways. But I did take some inspiration from this book. It's by Abundance Canada. And it says, giving of your first fruits, money, faith, and worship. And there's some beautiful quotes in here. And he says, sometimes our giving may be an effort to bribe God for personal favors. At other times, we may give selfishly, expecting God to reward us financially. If we give for the applause of people, there will be no further reward from God for our generosity. God's gifts gifts offered to God never cover an impure heart. And then another quote that I really appreciate. He said, God asks us for our money because he wants our hearts. God knows that if he can get us to offer our first fruits of income to him, our hearts will follow. Our hearts and our money are inseparably connected. Our gifts to God are intended to be acts of love and gratitude. If our heart is not in it, it will still be a gift, but we will miss out on God's blessing. And listen to this, a gift without heart is not worship. All right? So when we give as an act of worship, we begin to grow spiritually by trusting God. When we give as an act of worship, every time we give, we declare that Jesus Christ is first in our lives. When we give as an act of worship, when we give to God, God also celebrates, saying, "These are my people." And so there's an element where God is celebrating when we give to Him. And Malachi 3 verses 6 to 12 talks more in detail about that. When we give as an act of worship, we affirm that our Father in heaven, who sees us in secret, will in fact reward us in secret. When we give as an act of worship, we affirm that our righteous acts exceed those of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. When we give as an act of worship, we invest in the values of heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy. When we give as an act of worship, the eye, that is our spirit, is a lamp that lights up our whole body, and generosity has a way of blessing God and blessing people. And when we give as an act of worship, we serve God because worship is a verb. It is about our sacrifice to God. And so as we think of this today, where is your treasure?